extra words about books. This is a poorly spoken podcast. Today we're going to be talking about Heir to the Empire again, because our last recording was terrible. I am Nate, and we're joined by Ben, my co-host as always. How's it going, buddy?
It's going pretty well. I'm excited to take another stab at this.
Yeah, last time we weren't sure how we wanted to talk about the books. God, I don't even know if we got through general points. We just kind of said the book was a jumbled mess, and we moved on to questions. I do remember that we tried to record a summary like two or three times and couldn't do it.
Heir to the Empire was the first attempt we did at a podcast, and we didn't really know what the podcast was going to be. We didn't really know what format we wanted to settle on or anything like that. And also, to Heir to the Empire's detriment, we had not yet read a really terrible book on the podcast. And we were perhaps, I think, definitely too harsh on Heir to the Empire.
We also hadn't seen the final Star Wars movie that hadn't been released yet. I just watched it for the first time today. Most definitely be creeping its way into the podcast.
I saw it in the theater with my coworkers. There's a lot of big Star Wars fans at my office. They wanted to see it. And I can safely say, though, all three of us left the theater thinking, like, that wasn't good, right? Like, you don't think that was good, right? And no, all three of us, I'd say we were, some of us were more positive than others, but nobody liked it.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be in that camp, because you sound like you really didn't like it. And I was just like, it's filler. It's a whole movie of filler, but it's also the final chapter somehow.
I wouldn't even be that kind to it. Yeah, you're right.
The first time we did this, we were going to compare this one to The Force Awakens. And I guess the idea was we'd eventually read the other two books in the Thrawn trilogy and compare those to their respective films, but I don't know if we're ever going to do that.
I don't think we can do that right now. Like, we've got enough books on our list that we have to get to that it's going to, if we do revisit the Thrawn trilogy past Heir to the Empire, it's going to be a bit in the future.
We'll call this Heir to the Empire Special Edition, because, you know, Star Wars has this remaking thing. But unlike George Lucas, we will keep the original Heir to the Empire up on our side, even though it's bad and you shouldn't listen to it. I guess about the author real quick, and then we'll just kind of move on. Timothy Zahn is our author. He's known for writing military sci-fi novels. And Heir to the Empire was the first book in the expanded universe. So this is what set the whole thing in motion. He went on to write at least two sequels. I know he wrote a whole bunch more, but he wrote two immediate sequels to this called the Thrawn Trilogy. And at the time, they were like the unofficial sequel trilogy. So this would have been episode 7, and its two sequels would have been 8 and 9.
Well, they were the official continuation until Disney purchased it, until just a few years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, this was canon.
Yes.
George Lucas, I don't think, gave a shit about the books, but he did sign off on them.
He only gave a shit about them in as far as they made them money, made him money.
I think he had a fairly negative opinion about the stuff he didn't write.
That's fine. I'm pretty sure everyone has a fairly negative opinion about the things he did write. So we can agree to disagree. George, please keep inviting me to your Christmas parties. George Lucas, say whatever you want about him, and we do. He was a great businessman.
He sold Star Wars for like the price of a small country's GDP.
He took Disney for a ride.
Yeah, he did.
All right, let's get into the book. Unless you want to keep talking about George Lucas, we can make this the words about George Lucas.
No, the only thing I want to say, I just want to say a couple of things about Timothy Zahn, since we are properly redoing this.
That's fair.
Yeah, Timothy Zahn, I don't know if you mentioned that he got his doctorate in physics. So when it comes to the science, he actually knows what he's talking about. He writes a lot of military-style sci-fi novels, and like we said, he wrote extensively for the Star Wars Expanded Universe and continues to write for the Disney canon version of the Expanded Universe. He's a pretty prolific author. I've never actually read anything by him that wasn't part of the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, we'll have to give him a fair shake at some point.
He was commissioned to write this, obviously.
He didn't buy the rights from George Lucas.
Yeah, this isn't a passion project of Timothy Zahn's. This was something he did to pay the bills. So, yeah, with that said, I think I'm ready to move on.
All right. And I guess I should say the reason I picked this book is because I was curious on how it stacked up against Episode 7, and I saw it at Barnes & Noble on my birthday, so I made my wife buy it for me. Yeah. <Wow. laughs> Terrible, terrible birthday gift.
$7 on that paperback Star Wars novel.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess, okay. I guess I didn't hate this book. Guess it was all right. It entertained me enough.
One more thing I want to say to place this book in its context, which I think you need to do, is this book came out in 1991. It is a very different time period. You have to throw out everything you know about the prequels, everything you know about the sequels, all the, you know, most of the books and comics. It's a very different, it's almost a different take on Star Wars, because he didn't know what was coming. There's a lot of things that just outright are contradicted by the prequels.
There's this obvious assumption in there that the Clone Wars was a fight against clones.
Yeah. There's just so many little things. It was a different time. Return of the Jedi was a few years in the past. I don't think everybody thought Star Wars was over, but it was still popular. They wanted to do a little bit more with it. So this is kind of a novel written as merchandise, as a toy, because it is a real novel, but
it was designed to start something, to get more merchandise in the future.
Yeah, it's very like corporate. He can't take any risks. Every decision Timothy Zahn makes in this book has to be like approved by a committee, and that shows.
That's why I said we'll have to read one of his actual books at some point.
Oh, I tell you what, like even some of his Expanded Universe novels, like especially I think when they realized what they wanted to do with the Expanded Universe and they designed a couple of like arcs and they thought of like, okay, we can actually kill this character. We can introduce a new character.
Do they kill a character and then bring them back 3 minutes later?
No, Chewbacca stays dead in the Expanded Universe.
Oh my God.
He's the first one to die. The only one to
die.
Yeah,
he gets a moon dropped on him.
It's a fucking moon dropped on him. Ready to jump into it?
So we open the book with Thrawn. And we'll just get this out of the way right now. Thrawn is the main character of this book. We talked about this last time. He's the guy making all the decisions. He's got all the agency. The heroes simply react to what he's doing and what he's planning. And they actually aren't even aware of his existence until towards the end of this book. So it's kind of a problem, but we'll get to that as we go further into the book. Thrawn is a blue alien man. I don't think they say what race he is in this book because they probably didn't know at the time.
He's a Chiss.
He is a Chiss. They never mention that race, though.
Thrawn is also still a canonical character.
Yes, he is. Strangely enough, he must have been popular enough that they wanted to keep him around.
He's incredibly popular. Like the Expanded Universe novels are incredibly popular. They still sell, even though they're not canon.
So Thrawn is a Grand Admiral of the former Empire, and he is dead set. He is gung-ho on winning the Galactic Civil War, even after they you know, they've lost their emperor, their emperor's right-hand man, their second super weapon, and their entire fleet, or most of their entire fleet, in Return of the Jedi.
They've lost so many people that indeed most of the Republic doesn't know they're still in a civil war.
Yes. They thought that they won the Battle of Endor, destroyed the Imperial fleet, and then they mopped up what was left. And they are not aware that they are currently in a civil war. Also aboard Thrawn's Star Destroyer, which I think is called the Chimera. Is that right?
It is, yes.
All right. I remembered that. So we've got his right-hand man, Captain Pelion? Is that?
Pelion, yes.
And his bodyguard, Ruck. Ruck is a Nagri, which is not a species that the Republic is aware of at this time.
A lot of that going around.
Yeah.
Just a lot of, they're not aware of the Chiss or the Nagri or the still existing Empire. Space is a big place, man.
And the Republic's not very good at this, as we'll find out. I did like at this point, so this part of the book is told from Pelion's perspective. And he's just musing on how stupid the Emperor's plan was in Return of the Jedi and how things might have been different if Thrawn were there. So I thought that was an interesting take because it was a stupid plan and it did backfire horribly.
What was stupid about it?
The plan of we're going to tell you where our super weapon is and tell you where the shield generator is. And we're going to just hope that you don't destroy the shield generator and then fly inside of our battle station with gigantic Millennium Falcon-sized holes. Because they fly the entire ship inside of the Death Star and blow it up. And his plan was also to tempt Luke, which also didn't work. Really, the Emperor didn't really have a lot going for him in that movie, did he? Just a lot of bad ideas.
To be fair to the Emperor.
Why would you?
He tricked Anakin pretty easy. And there was really no reason to expect Anakin's son would be the one to start asking questions.
Well, maybe if he said, "Hey, Luke, you want to go kill some children?" Maybe that would have done it. Because that was what seemed to trigger Anakin, you know. "Hey, you're evil. Go kill some children for me, bro. Do me a solid."
When he was like, "Hey, Luke, I knew a guy who had the power to bring back life, and like, how hard could it be?"
I
bet I could figure it out.
I like that because he was like, "Hey, there was once this guy who could bring people back to life, and then his apprentice, me, murdered him in his sleep. Therefore, follow me, I guess."
Despite all his power, he couldn't not get murdered in his sleep. The only one he couldn't save was himself. He made it sound like it was his hubris that killed him, and it's just like, no, you stabbed a sleeping man. That's not...
Yeah, what a dick!
Yeah, I could do that, man. That's not fancy Jedi magic.
Yeah, I guess that's right. The Emperor had a great plan if he were still dealing with idiots. But the heroes in Return of the Jedi were just a little bit smarter than Anakin was.
Just a little.
Just a little.
As we're about to find out.
Yeah. So the former Imperials, and here's a criticism I have of this sequel trilogy. I don't know how powerful the First Order is. I don't know how much influence they have, how much they own, what planets they hold, what have you. Same with the Republic and the Resistance. Or if there even is a Republic. Did they get blown up?
Well, so we're talking about the new trilogy?
Yeah.
Okay. So my questions, I guess, about the First Order would be, first off, who are they?
Yes.
Are they the Empire? Are they like...
Hold on. Before you go forward, why the First Order? Wouldn't the Empire be the First Order? And this would be like the Second Order?
Well, what is an order?
I don't know. I assumed it's like a Reich.
Okay. Well, maybe they're like, but that's what I'm wondering. Like, are they the Empire?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
I mean, they use TIE fighters, and so I guess they must be the Empire.
But they're not.
I don't know. But they're the, I don't know. I don't know who they are.
An empire of what? Their empire crumbled around them.
Or what they want. Or
well, what they want is to blow up a bunch of planets.
Well, yeah. So I was going to say, like, what they want is to take over the galaxy, but they blow up a small chunk of it to prove a point. And
they threaten to blow up the rest of it.
And I don't want to be pedantic here, but, like, are habitable planets not worth a lot? Yeah,
I was thinking the same thing.
Are you just so flush with habitable planets that you could just blow up 3 or 5 or whatever they do in the first movie? 5
in the first one, and then they blew up 1 in the last one.
You know what's funny, too? This is me being just a nitpicking asshole, but, like, I'm sure somebody's mentioned this. Shouldn't those, like, lasers they fired travel at the speed of light?
Yes, someone has mentioned this.
Yeah, so it's
how did they go across the galaxy? The Death Star was right next to Alderaan. Because it didn't shoot across the galaxy to hit Yavin. They had to go there and shoot it.
Yeah, so... Yeah, they did!
Yeah!
They... I was going to say, like, the first one wasn't exactly hard sci-fi, but you know what? Yeah, that made more sense. So you fire 5 lasers that will destroy the planet in, like, 10,000 years.
Yeah. Assuming those planets are still there. And...
But you know what they did? You know what they did? They probably fired it through hyperspace.
Which is whatever you want it to be, depending on what
movie. It's whatever you need it to be.
Yeah. Oh, God, you're going to make me bring that up. Okay.
Well, no, so I think our point, I mean, the point you were trying to make in contrast to, this is a point in favor of Thrawn. We know who the Empire is.
Yes.
We know what they want. We know how many resources they have. We know that they're at a disadvantage.
Yep. We know in this book, they lost the battle at the Return of the Jedi, and now they're definitely on the back foot. They're struggling to gain any sort of meaningful advantage in this war that is basically one-sided at this point.
No, I agree. I think as far as, like, the comparison to the movies goes, I'd say a small, like, the tables have been turned now. The Imperials are the rebels and vice versa. So, yeah, I think we know what we're dealing with right off the bat. We know what the stakes are. We know what everybody's motivation is. Good show Timothy's on.
And yeah, they're doing rebel-like things. We start with them just raiding a data cache on the fringes of New Republic space. And the scouts Thrawn sent out, they report mission success, but they're being pursued by a small New Republic force. And Pelion, he actually wants to just retreat, which is not something you're used to seeing Imperials do. You're used to seeing them crush all resistance. So he's like, well, shit, they outgun us. But Thrawn actually has a better plan. And this is what makes Thrawn different. He's not a space wizard. He can't jump and do 7 flips and cut you in half. But he's really, really smart. And he's really good at commanding battles. And so he does a few maneuvers to determine what species is controlling the ships that are coming after them, and he makes a plan. It's like a basic counter maneuver that they don't know how to defend against, and he wipes out the enemy ships without losing a single one of his own. Okay, we talked about this last time. It's going to come up. Thrawn has his magic knowledge of species based on their art. He studies their art, and that's how he understands how they think. Is that a little like problematic or strange to you?
Yeah, the thing I was going to say is Star Wars never really got too much into like alien species, like the differences between the aliens and the humans. So it's that is something the extended universe really likes to dive into, and I guess it's just like a fantasy trope that we want to know, like how the elves are different from the orcs and from the humans, and we want to know everybody's stats and all that. And so like humans do whatever they want to do. They think outside the box, they do whatever they want, and apparently so do Chiss. But this species that is also sentient, that also has developed space travel, that also has a space navy, their brains are wired in such a way that they, I guess they're like hyper-logical. Is that what he says about them?
Yeah, I think that they have a very concrete way of thinking.
Yeah, and there's just like, there's something about the maneuver he does that's like, it has a flourish that doesn't make any logical sense to it or something like that. And it's really just like needlessly fancy, and they don't quite comprehend that. And that allows him to defeat them. And it's an interesting idea for establishing that Thrawn, unlike most Imperials, thinks it's worth his time to study his enemy, because the Emperor never seemed to be overly concerned with the people he was dominating. He just, like you said, trampled them with overwhelming force. He didn't need to study them or to try to understand them. He didn't have any value in that, but Thrawn does. The only problem is it's stupid. Because it's one thing to know like how somebody's culture determines their battle tactics, but we're also all kind of using the same equipment here. Like this is a Republic fleet. I assume they're trained in all the same tactics of the Republic Navy and all that. And I don't know. It just seemed odd to me that like the aliens are less sentient than everybody else in the room.
Plus, if he studied my art, be like stick figures, I wouldn't tell him anything.
Well, and that's the other thing. Yeah, he's super into like literal paintings.
Right, and sculptures.
Yeah. God help him if he ever runs into like the dolphin species.
God help him if he goes on songs. DeviantArt.
Well, now this particular species is very into Sonic the Hedgehog pornography. I'm going to go off on a small tangent here, but I was just reading an aside about how things changed in horror from the 70s and 80s to the present. And one of the big things that changed was like monsters kill you. But then as time went on and like we got the serial killers in real life, and they were intelligent but psychopathic, then all of a sudden, like, everybody had to be a Hannibal Lecter, sipping wine in their library, plotting elaborate murders and all that stuff. Thrawn's that kind of villain.
Yeah.
Where the Emperor was an evil space wizard, Thrawn is an evil space, like, Moriarty.
And we also talked about, and we both agreed, he is overpowered. But he's overpowered in a different way. Like you said, he's not an evil magic space wizard. So I think it's more interesting that way, because it's not just, let's do the same thing.
He's overpowered in the sense that you couldn't derive his conclusions from the data he takes in.
Right.
So he just kind of looks at a thing, rolls a history check, and Timothy's on as the DM tells him, yes, you know that this species can't do this.
All right, let's move on. We're going to go to Luke, Han, and Leia for the next chapter. So Luke is on Coruscant, So Luke is there. Obi-Wan says he's crossing over to the other side and will cease to exist. So that's kind of weird. Let's go to Ben's douche philosophy corner if you want.
I don't know that there's much douche philosophy to really apply to this, but like, especially, you know what? This is a good point where we can compare the current trilogy to the new trilogy or whatever. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. The two things we're talking about. So I got problems. Okay. I got problems with the Force ghosts in both of these.
Absolutely. For different reasons.
Yeah. Basically, the Force ghosts in the original trilogy were just supposed to be like Shakespeare move the plot along ghosts.
Yes.
Like, I'm going to tell you, I lied to you about your father. Oops. But no, now in this one, Obi-Wan is going to the proper Christian heaven and he can no longer talk to Luke in this occult manner anymore. Which doesn't make sense. I don't know where the fuck that came from, other than to just get Obi-Wan out of the story.
I think that's the whole point of it. They're like, oh shit, we need to get him out of there. I guess heaven is a thing now. Obi-Wan, go to heaven.
He's going to the afterlife, but it's like, no, it's like there's a, I'm going to say the Jedi, I don't know. I think they were actually inspired by Buddhist stuff. Which, you know, the Buddhist idea is that they're really, I guess they believe in other realms of existence, but there's really no heaven or hell end point. You just kind of exit the stream of death and rebirth. And the Force is also just kind of like you just return to the Force. There's nothing beyond the Force in Star Wars.
In this one, Obi-Wan is going to that special heaven where it's tits and wine and cookies all the time. So,
well, no, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Obi-Wan's
and then he'll be reincarnated, I guess.
He's going to heaven or something. So, bye. And then we could talk about the new one where Force ghosts are just magic poltergeists that can do whatever fuck they want.
They can grab items. They can
call lightning from the fucking heavens.
Yes. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah, no. Like, you know how when Obi-Wan said, if you strike me down, I'll become more powerful than you ever imagined? He meant that. Yeah. You were doing him a favor. He was ascending into godhood with that.
Like you said, why did Luke just not go with Rey to confront the Emperor then?
Go with Rey. He's everywhere.
Yeah.
Why isn't he talking to Rey and killing the Emperor at the same time?
Why is he still staying on the fucking island? I think that they wanted Obi-Wan out of the way in Thrawn because Luke's whole thing was, how am I going to learn to like become a teacher and train the next Jedis? And they don't want him to be able to just ask Obi-Wan.
Why not? What would that hurt anything? Like, you don't have to pay Alec Guinness anymore. It's a book. Oh, God. Anyway, I guess, yeah. So if we're going to have to decide between the new trilogy and Heir to the Empire, I think both of them, I'm not giving anyone a point here.
Yeah, no. No points. This we're round, both bad.
This round is a draw. These are both terrible ideas.
So now we go to Leia, and she's 3 months pregnant. And she's accompanied by her assistant, Winter, who has an eidetic memory. And I mention that only because it's a trend in the books that we read for this podcast.
Oh my gosh.
She doesn't do anything in this book and will never mention her again. So Han Solo, meanwhile, is in Mos Eisley. He's trying to recruit smugglers to run freight for the New Republic. I think that they were running low on ships, or they had more material than they could transport with the ships they have, or...
I guess that would make some sense, then. Depends how desperate the government is. You can get a pretty sweet gig doing that, and you're not going to get arrested or shot. So factor that into the price.
Talon Card, and I'm going to mispronounce her name, so just tell me what it is.
Mara Jade?
Okay, Mara. All right.
What were you going to say?
I'm not telling you.
Like, these like Marinara?
That's what they called her in college. They're information brokers and also smugglers. And they, I guess they're going to be partners. He's talking about making her a partner or a successor or something. And they're interrupted by Thrawn and Pelion, who have their minions come to Talon Card's, the world of his base of operations. I'm not going to remember locations, and it's really not important.
Oh, no, shit. That location is important. No.
You're killing me. Why is it important?
Because of its native wildlife.
Yeah, it's got the little furry creatures with the ability to create a bubble that the Force doesn't affect. Annoys you, yep. I know.
Yep. Sure does.
So, do you want to go to that douche philosophy corner again?
What, already? Wow. Well, yeah, basically Talon Card lives on a planet that has these creatures called Isalamiri. And the Isalamiri are... they create a bubble that the Force cannot enter. My problem with it is that obviously the Force is supposed to be this thing that's unique to all life. It surrounds us and binds us and penetrates us. And it just, except these things, except these rats. The Force is something outside that they can block. But in the original trilogy, I got the vibe that the Force was supposed to be some kind of mystical, like, spiritual thing. And George Lucas and everybody who works on Star Wars seems fucking bound and determined to make the Force a physical property of the universe, despite the fact that nothing else in their sci-fi, like, menagerie is even remotely scientifically plausible. Spend a little less time telling me about midichlorians and a little more time telling me what the fuck hyperspace is.
Yeah, hyperspace is actually less explained than the Force.
Yeah, yeah. The method in which spaceships travel is infinitely more magical to me than the magic.
Yeah, I got from the original trilogy, it was a spiritual thing.
Well, nope. It's biological. It's just a biological field.
In the sequel trilogy, it becomes Dragon Ball Z power. You start shooting lightning into space.
So much mileage out of that Force lightning. That became like way more of a big deal than I think Lucas ever intended it to be.
So Pelion and his minions get a bunch of the Isalamiri. Whatever. Furry creatures that can create force bubbles as part of Thrawn's plan. So, Thrawn, he knows where an Imperial storehouse is because of the information he got at the beginning of the book. And they go there and they immediately just start repressing locals. They kill a man. Finally, an old man's like, I can take you to the storehouse that you seek. And then when they get there, it turns out that's a crazy Jedi, and he force lightnings them to death. It's made of the Force, and so furry creatures block it, I guess. He's a fallen Jedi named Seboth? That's how another YouTube channel
Seboth
called him. So
that can't be right.
Nate from the future here, and after a 5-minute long discussion that also included talking about cloning my wife so that I can have a three-way with her and my wife's clone, we determined that it was pronounced Sebaoth. Thrawn and Pelion, they use their furry creature monsters that are really adorable to negate the force lightning from Sebaoth. They also find two technologies. One is a cloaking technology in the storehouse, and another is not revealed until the end of the next book. Sebaoth, you're going to join up with Thrawn in exchange for having Jedi to dominate and twist to his will in the form of Luke and Leia. And so Thrawn will help capture them, and in exchange, Sebaoth will help them using his magic powers to boost the fleet.
So we have a dark Jedi, and have we gotten to his battle meditation? Because you mentioned he's going to help their fleet with his magic powers.
I just said his magic powers, but if you want, I'll say his battle meditation, where it's a special ability where he drives you and your soldiers to greater success. It's like a morale boost, and it makes your focus, your concentration, your mental capacities enhance, so you're more likely to win battles.
Well, yeah, so it has a bardic inspiration effect, but it also has the added bonus of being a faster than light communication device. So that's going to be, that allows Thrawn to conduct simultaneous attacks in different parts of the galaxy that nobody can understand how he can organize, because apparently you can't do that. Which is, I know for a damn fact, is contradicted in later EU novels. Oh, one more thing at this point. I want to do another comparison to the new trilogy.
Okay.
So this has hyperspace nonsense, what the force is nonsense. So we're just going to go ahead and I'm going to lump the prequels into this. Midichlorians. You know what? Midichlorians are worse. Midichlorians are worse. And that weird Admiral Purple Hair thing was worse. And there was something else with hyperspace I didn't like.
Well, there was a douche on YouTube who was like, guys, you just all assumed what hyperspace was. It never said that you couldn't turn it around and blow up a bunch of ships by hyperspacing at them. In the movie previous to that, they hyperspaced to the other side of a shield. So hyperspace is magic. Sometimes it goes through objects, and sometimes it crashes into them.
So sometimes you move through normal space at a speed faster than light, and other times you move through like a kind of wormhole.
Yes.
I'm giving this one to Thrawn. So it is now, what is it, two to nothing?
If it wasn't clear, Ben awarded a point to Thrawn because he understood Thrawn better than he understood the First Order, and the setup was better. So I'm going to glaze over this, but there's several chapters here where Thrawn knows that Leia has to go to some planet on diplomatic work, and he knows it's like just a random planet. It's only there to serve as an action set piece, and then you go to another planet and you do the same thing. He sends his Nagri commandos to capture the team. It doesn't work twice. I don't know what they were expecting, because Luke just cuts through them like butter. But yeah, that's kind of what I felt like all of Rise of Skywalker was. It was a series of going to planets and stuff happening, and ultimately nothing really happened for the overall plot. And that's what these two B-named planets are.
I agree that these two, like, so most of what Luke, Han, and Leia and Chewbacca do in this book doesn't really relate to the plot of the book.
No.
They're just kind of going about their daily lives, and in the background, Thrawn is doing his machinations and trying to capture Leia. And the Nagri keep failing. Luke is just more than a match for them. He easily takes out like just wave after wave of Nagri. But I would say that there is some small character building that happens in these, you know, side quests. We find a little, like, we get a little bit of interaction between Han and Leia, what their married life is like a little bit. And we also find out a little bit about Luke. We get some idea that, you know, wow, shit, he's really good at this Jedi stuff now. He couldn't do that in the last movie. So they're complete scenes. They have start points, they have end points. There's some character development in between. In the new movies, it was just like, bam, we're on a planet. Bam, we're on a planet. Bam, we're on a planet.
I still don't know. Were they going to look for Lando on that first planet?
I have no fucking clue.
The planet with the pig people.
Dude, I couldn't even keep up. I was like, I will tell you when I gave up on that movie, and that was when they started the tug of war with the prison ship. And I was just like, what the fuck is going on? She could just grab a ship now. But man, I didn't get any character development. There wasn't a single slow moment. Keep in mind, I read Heir to the Empire a while ago, and I didn't like it that much. I saw the new Star Wars movie much more recently, and I could tell you way more about the Nagri attack on the planet Leia went to. I could not remember. Like, Lando was there, and then they had to run. I don't remember why. So then they ran, and they were like, they fly now, they fly now, they fly now. They flew before. They flew many times before this. Anyway, then they crashed the speeder. I forgot they even crashed the speeder. In my mind,
they got shot with a rocket. They did not crash. A rocket blew up the vehicle they were riding, and they fell face first, going like 120 miles per hour into the ground, and they're all fine.
Yeah, and then they fall into a quicksand cave, which is a thing, and then they heal a snake, and the snake gives them a dagger and says, this is where you find the Sith. And I'm giving another point to Heir to the Empire. I at least knew what was going on.
The dagger was constructed with the outline of the Death Star in mind.
Oh my god, yeah, I forgot about that. So what I will say though is I'm comparing it mostly to like the trilogy as a whole. Episode 7 compared to Heir to the Empire, if we were just going like book for book, I would kind of give Episode 7 the win over Heir to the Empire. It's fine. They're both fine. Like, the thing that Episode 7 has going for it is Star Wars is not original. It's never really been about the script. It's about the filmmaking, the special effects, the music, the visuals.
I did like Episode 7. But I think part of that was it was the first time I saw a Star Wars movie in like a decade. And I saw it with my friends.
Anyway, I don't know what's going on. So Leia went on her side quest and she got attacked by Nagri.
Twice. Two different planets.
Now they're like, okay, we got to do something about this. It's just embarrassing.
Yes. Their plan is to hide. Actually, their plan first is to use Lando to splice into an official like feed so that they know what's going on with the Republic so that they're not out of the loop while they hide.
So the whole Leia Han thing, it's pointless. It's just dumb busy work because they didn't have anything for Leia and Han to do.
Yeah, they do a little more next book. But yeah, they don't do anything this book. But they decide they're going to go visit Lando to do that thing. Meanwhile, Luke, he went to Dagobah to see if there's anything in Yoda's hut, which is like completely grown over and destroyed. So he instead goes to the spooky, scary, evil cave from Empire. And once there, he sees a vision of Marinara Jade getting him killed at Jabba's barge in Return of the Jedi. And he also finds an electronic device. And hey, he thinks that he saw a similar device that Lando once had. So he's going to go pay him a visit. And then elsewhere, Thrawn is like, you know what? We need to get, like, mole miners for this plan of mine to succeed. And we haven't had any luck purchasing the amount that we need. But I know of this guy named Lando who happens
Look, I'm going
to
stop you there. I'm going to stop you there. Thrawn is like, you know what? This feels like the end of Act Two. I think we should all go to Lando's house.
Yeah. So they all show up at Lando's house.
Lando's house, though, is admittedly cool as shit.
It is a very... They should have just spent the whole book on this place.
This is where Timothy Zahn's, like, sci-fi chops actually show through. He designs a really interesting, like, solid physics, solid sci-fi set piece for the world Lando is currently mining.
So, going back to Lando's house, where all of his friends are over, and then mean old Mr. Thrawn comes in, and there's a fight. So they manage to chase Thrawn away, but he steals all the mole miners, as he does. So mission accomplished for him. The mole miners are being used for an upcoming operation called the Sluis Von Shipyard?
You didn't tell me what a mole miner is.
It's a drilling thing.
Okay, so Thrawn's main goal for this book is to acquire more ships.
Yes.
For his space navy.
Yes.
Okay.
Because he can't just have them appear.
You're right. That's a point in favor of Heir to the Empire. It is now 4-0. No, 4-1.
So, Lando, he doesn't know how to bug the information network, but he knows a guy named Talon Card who might be able to help them out.
I know a guy named Talon Card.
It's weird how that works out, right?
The famous smuggler, Talon Card? A profession in which brand recognition is perhaps not the best thing?
Meanwhile, they decide to stash Leia with Chewie on the Wookiee homeworld. So they go through an elaborate ruse where, like, Lando's ship and the Millennium Falcon, they leave, and then they connect, and then, like, they switch around the passengers, and they reprogram C-3PO's voice to sound like Leia's voice to try and trick whoever is listening in on where she is. Thrawn immediately figures it out, and none of that matters. Thrawn sees, like, a hologram. It's like, okay, they were connected for, like, 48 seconds, and that's enough time for two people to move in either direction. And, let's see, that probably means it was Leia who went in that direction.
I'm just picturing a blue guy with red eyes, and it's that, like, equations meme. Yeah, and so he figures out exactly what happened. Their ruse is a failure.
So he knows that Leia is going to go to Kashyyyk, the Wookiee homeworld, and Thrawn sends his shitty commandos to fail another mission trying to take Leia from the Wookiees. And one of them has the opportunity to capture her, but stops because she smells like Darth Vader. Ew. And she decides to try to broker a deal with this guy to go visit his home planet and get them on their side. But that won't happen for the next book, and Leia doesn't do anything after this. Thoughts and comments, Ben.
So, this is one interesting thing, because I did mention that I had read other Expanded Universe books. And in other Expanded Universe books, Leia has Nagri bodyguards. And I had no idea what... I knew that was a thing from the other books, but I didn't want to go back and read everything. So, I learned something.
So that is the subject of the next book, where Leia actually does stuff. Yes. Oh, God. Okay, where the fuck were we? Okay, we were talking about why would the Nagri swear an oath?
Yeah, so I just wondered that. So future books, it's covered.
Yeah, it's covered in future books. So that's the end of Leia's story. She does nothing plot relevant for the rest of the book. Now, there's also some background political dissent between Admiral Akbar and a Bonthan named Faela. Faela? I'm giving up on these names.
Faelia.
Faelia? Really?
Faelia.
Failure. Okay. So Failure is Bonthan.
Bothan.
Bothan. Oh, God.
They say that one in the movie.
So Failure was the leader of the Bothans, who got the Death Star 2 plans, and he's just been riding that success ever since. And he suggests that Admiral Akbar sucks at his job and can't protect all their shipping, and he needs to be imprisoned for treason, I guess. And it's running in the background the entire book, and at the end of the book, Failure becomes commander-in-chief of the military. We cool?
Yeah, you said Akbar, right? I don't know what else I'm here for.
Now we go to Luke, and he was actually called through the Force to Sebaoth. And he's on his way there. But Thrawn is aware of this, and he doesn't want to give Luke over just yet. So, and Sebaoth went back to the storehouse. Mount Tantus, I think is what it's called. So, Thrawn pulls Luke out of hyperspace, because he knows where he's coming from and where he's going. They attempt to tractor beam him, and he does a risky maneuver, and he manages to escape, but it ends up wrecking his X-Wing in the process. He doesn't know if R2-D2 will be able to fix it, so he goes into a meditative state. It's basically like a force-induced coma.
It's more of like a hibernation state, so that he's burning less of his now limited supply of oxygen. And
he awakens from this state when Talon Karrde comes upon him in deep space, because Mara Jade force magic mad mumbo jumbo, and that's how they knew where he was. And Karrde takes him prisoner. He doesn't know if he wants to sell him to the Empire or sell him to the New Republic, but he knows he can make a decent chunk of change one way or the other. He just has to think about it.
If I remember, Luke is like pretty chipper.
Yeah.
Throughout his imprisonment.
It's to contrast with Marinara Jade, who is constantly saying how much she fucking hates Luke. He's a piece of shit. I'm going to kill you someday. You look the wrong way, I'm going to stab you. Like, she really hates this guy.
Now, it's rarely directed towards me, but I do want to say that sort of reminds me of the dynamic my wife and I have, where it's like if we were to talk about politics.
Oh, Jesus. Don't talk about politics with your wife.
We agree on everything. That's the crazy part. But she wants to fight every politician. And you know, she'd win.
I am willing to put up money to see her fight every politician. I would pay to see that.
No, she's very aggressive to my very much, like, I'm not quite as happy as Luke, but I'm very low energy. So
that's a good way of putting it. Past Nate and past Ben then proceed to talk about Ben's wife fighting politicians and then Ben fighting politicians for like 3 minutes. Sorry, everyone. Neither of them are eligible to be voted into the White House in 2020.
Anyway,
Yeah, anyway. So Luke is taken prisoner by Talancard. And meanwhile, Han and Lando are going to visit Talancard for a different reason. Thrawn, meanwhile, decides that he's not going to waste his own resources looking for Luke. He'll just hire a bunch of smugglers in the area. You know, he'll just, this guy and that guy and, oh, this Talancard guy, we know him. Let's hire him to do it. He's a little suspicious when Talancard doesn't want to join in on the search. And when they're talking via transmission, he kind of thinks that Card is hiding something from him and decides to pay him a visit. And so Lando, Han, Thrawn and all his goons, Luke, Mara, and Talon all end up on the same planet at the same time in the same place. Luke can't use his power here because the planet has all the furry little creatures on it, so he has to get a little creative in breaking out of here. Talon has to hide Luke from Han and Lando and Thrawn, and he has to hide Han and Lando from Thrawn. It's like one of those sitcoms where you go to the prom with two different people and you have to make sure none of them find out that you're dating two people at the same time. You're constantly running back and forth between the two and making up lame excuses. That's what it felt like.
I think that's what it was intended to be like. It was very much like a comedy scene.
And this is where Han and Lando spot Thrawn for the first time in his uniform and realize that their enemy is a Grand Admiral. And it's like 80% of the way through the book, which is kind of a problem because they just now found the chief antagonist of the trilogy.
Well, yeah, because up until this point, like, they didn't even know it was the Empire, right?
Yeah, I think that they were starting to get an inkling that, like, the Empire was doing something, but, like, they were just a minor nuisance. Like, they're hitting our shipping. It's really annoying. We need to take care of them. I don't think they thought, like, this is war.
Okay, so they see a guy, and they're like, oh my god, he's a Grand Admiral. Look at that badge on his chest. But, like, what the fuck else would he be?
Yeah, that's a good point. Wouldn't he? What if he self-promoted himself to Grand Admiral?
If they've got more than one Admiral, they're going to need a Grand Admiral.
So Luke manages to escape captivity. And
using only his advanced technical knowledge, mechanical hand, and martial arts.
Yes. And Mara hates him, and so she gives chase, and they both crash land in the forest. What are you trying to say?
I was just going to say, I like how, like, Luke is like, oh my god, without the Force, I'm basically crippled. Cut to Han and Lando.
Looking at him like, you motherfucker.
And they don't even know, like, even without the Force, Luke is just, like, more physically fit than them too. It's just insult to injury.
Without the Force, I'm just a guy with six-pack abs and the ability to climb up a building and really good swordsmanship and stunning good looks. God, I'm
a mechanical
I'm
hand.
Such a fucking loser. Mechanical hand.
Is yeah. His pilot able to repair anything? Smoking hot redhead who kind of love hates me.
Whoa, spoilers.
Oh yeah, you didn't know where that was going.
So in the original canon, Luke does not become a hermit for 20 years and then drink milk directly from a giant space cow monkey thing's nipple. Instead, he bangs a redhead and has a kid.
Yeah, and you know what makes a lot more sense in the original canon? I'm just going to go ahead and make this a point to Heir to the Empire. I don't know what it is now, like 5-2. But Luke's kid is named Ben, which makes sense because Luke is the one who knew Obi-Wan Kenobi as Ben, not Han and Leia. I don't even think Leia met him. And Han knew him for 5 minutes and yelled at him most of the time and made fun of his religion.
He did not like him.
Yeah. So I don't know why Ben Solo was a thing. Leia's kids are Jason and Jaina, which made more sense. Because it's like Luke and Leia, because they're twins. And there's that was a dumb change. They should have kept that. I digress. I'm getting a little nerdy here.
So is that 6-2 or whatever? Yeah.
You know what? Going to give them another one for the twins.
So Luke and Mara, they're now in the forest. And the Empire, Thrawn's like, hey, I can help you out in finding those two. Because I think he suspects that one of them is Luke. They spend most of the time, Luke is like, why do you hate me so much? Like, why can't we be friends? And Mara's like, fuck you, I hate you. I'm going to kill you if you fuck up. That's like the entire conversation for several chapters as they make their way through the forest and fight creatures of the forest and evade Imperial patrols.
Yeah, and I really keep waiting for Luke to, like, one of these times where she's like, I'm going to kill you. And I just keep waiting for Luke to be like, you know what? Throw down.
So Luke stings his face a whole bunch to make it swell up. And he, because...
I forgot about that. So yeah, they're going into a town and Luke needs to disguise his identity. So he rubs like poison oak on his face so that it puffs up.
Oh, yeah. That's what it was. Yeah. And the Imperials are like, who are you? And he's like, I'm Jade. I work for Card. And this woman is like a prisoner. And they're like, what's wrong with your face? And his thought process was, oh, they didn't buy that it was just how I naturally look. I'm like, I would hope not. Your face is red and puffy and gross looking.
That's
dude.
Just, they could have mistaken him for the species of that I don't like you either guy. So they all get out. They're all in the...
Luke drops his disguise and he kills a bunch of Imperials.
He drops his disguise? His facial swelling goes away?
No, they're like, hey, we're going to get you some cream for that. He's like, ah, fuck. Like, then they're going to recognize me. And so I think he drops a pillar on a bunch of dudes. And Lando and Han also are there shooting things.
Yeah, I was going to say, Lando and Han have set up like an ambush or something.
Yes, with Card's men.
And Luke, to help out with their plan to save him, just murders everybody.
But at least he feels kind of bad about it? I don't remember. He felt bad about killing all those Nagri. He's like, well, I guess I have no choice. And then he just throws his lightsaber and cuts everyone in half.
You know what? He thought about it for 2 seconds. Point to Heir to the Empire. The bar is that low. Dude, when Rey just... And it was extra bad. Because at one point, like before she mows down a bunch of stormtroopers, or immediately after, I can't remember... She also just, like, force tricks two of them into letting her go. She could have done that the whole time.
I honestly expected them to kill those two stormtroopers.
Why wouldn't you? They killed all the other ones.
So now that all this is over, Thrawn, he left his guys behind, and then he had to go... raid the Sluis Von shipyards. He's been talking about it all book. He did a bunch of raids earlier to concentrate the amount of ships that would be at the shipyard. So he's ready to do that plan. Meanwhile, Luke's X-Wing is busted up, and so Han and Lando are going to tow him to the nearest shipyard to get it repaired, which happens to be the Sluis Von shipyards.
You know how when you need to get your car repaired, you go to the car factory?
That is how that works, right?
Yep.
You're not joking with me.
No. Do you not own a car?
This makes perfect sense. So Thrawn's plan, like I said, he concentrates all the ships on the shipyard, and then he sends a freighter in that's seemingly empty. But this is where that cloaking technology comes in. It masks that's carrying a shitload of TIE fighters. They bust out. There's a huge firefight. Luke and Han show up. Wedge is there because he's got to be there. He was in Rise of Skywalker, so he's got to be there. There's a bunch of military stuff, and they find out that those mole miners are being used to steal the ships by drilling through the airlock and then having the crew take over the ship. So Han, he thinks about this, and he's like, wait a minute. We could do this thing to destroy them. Lando, give me the codes to control your mole miners. And so he does. And he activates the mole miners to dig straight through the hull of all these ships and scuttle them and kill everyone, destroy all the ships. And Thrawn is like, well, that sucks. Like, and he orders a retreat. Pelion's confused. Pelion's like, hell, I thought you were going to order an all-out assault and like kill us all. And Thrawn's like, I'm not like all those other dumb idiots who used to run this fucking rinky-dink military.
Well, speaking of dumb idiots, you probably should have changed the codes.
Yeah, probably.
You probably just shouldn't have like a remote access code. Didn't have a painting about that, did you?
You dick.
Fucking prick.
So, you want to do closing thoughts? That's the book. That's the book.
So it does end with them foiling his plan to take the ship. I guess my closing thought would be, we went into this initially with the angle of, should they have made Heir to the Empire, or should they have made the Thrawn trilogy instead of the, I guess, for lack of a better word, the Rey trilogy. I think you have to put this book in context. I've been trying to separate, like find a good distinction for the books that are based on an existing property that is not originally a book. So your Halo books, your World of Warcraft books, your Star Wars, Star Trek, etc. And I'm going to settle on their kind of merchandise books. And just what I mean by that is they're just designed to be kind of like a toy or something you just consume. They're not really an author trying to say something. And something, you know, that's not to disparage the authors who do these kinds of books. Not every book has to be like high art or anything like that.
Eden sure isn't.
No, not at all.
Available on Amazon.
And so this is one of those books. And I think you kind of have to go into it with a little bit different expectations. Because I know in our original recording of this, we said, you know, it's content. It just gives you an opportunity to spend more time with the characters you liked. And I kind of stand by that, but I'd soften my stance on that a little bit. I think it's, if you go into it expecting it to be more like a comic book level of writing with maybe a little bit more expression, like Timothy Zahn does shine a couple of times in this book, like Lando's planet for one. And some of his ideas are actually pretty interesting and they stick with the expanded universe. And like I said, Thrawn is still canon. He was popular enough that they brought him back. I think this...
And this actually was adapted into a comic after the fact.
Oh, yeah. I think there's definitely something to work with here. The story as written, it's not a good enough story on its own merits to be made into a series of movies. Partly because it's just trying to extend the existing Star Wars franchise a little bit. It leans way too heavily on the previous material to be a standalone novel. And that's okay, because it's not a standalone novel. But if you wanted to make a movie, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. That being said, I do think there's something here. I think Thrawn is a decent enough character. I like Mara Jade. I was really upset that almost nothing from the EU made it into these movies. You know, I like Mara Jade. I think, I know they don't, if they're even born in this book. Jason and Jaina wind up being pretty interesting. There's stuff here to work with. If you took out a little bit of the serendipitous moments and maybe a
filler
fan service, I would say. Because you got to get Han in there, you got to get Leia in there, you got to get Luke. And like, I really think if you were going to do this as a movie, probably just follow Luke and have the other characters pop in and out. And then maybe in the next movie, they have larger roles. But this, yeah, it was a little too fan servicey. You got everybody from the old main cast to like Wedge Antilles in there. And it's like, doesn't have anything to do.
Get a job, Wedge.
Well, they don't have anything to do. That's the main problem. So he had to invent all these side quests that don't have anything to do with the plot, which is sort of like what a comic book does or a soap opera or something like that, where you have this ensemble cast and people are showing up for their favorite character and you just give them something to do. Even if it's not in service of the story you're trying to tell. And so Timothy Zahn had to work within those constraints, and he did the best he could, I think.
I would probably cut big chunks of this book and big chunks of the second book and just combine them together if I were making a film adaptation, and that would be the first episode of that trilogy, if that's what you'd do. We talked about, you know, Luke and Han and Leia, they're all too cool, like, not flawless, but they definitely don't want to change them. Definitely don't want to kill them. But I would rather have that than three washed up, broken down losers whose life fell apart after the last movie we saw.
Yeah, they overcorrected in the new movies on the flawed nature. Like, when we talked about this outside of the podcast, like, human beings are flawed, but we're not all, you know, garbage people. I would say Han being a bad father makes more sense than Han being a good father. Truth be told, I could very easily see Han is irresponsible. Leia works too much. I could see those kids basically being raised by Uncle Luke and not really having a lot of love for their parents. But my main problem with what the new series did to Luke, Luke can fail. He's not perfect. He's naive. That's Luke's flaw. He's naive. He's not a quitter. He's not a pessimist. And he's not this guy who would abandon his friends and family. He's too nurturing. I can't imagine Luke Skywalker raising his sword to a child, even if that child was going to the dark side. Like, this is the guy who risked everything to save Darth Vader, a man who had done nothing to earn his redemption.
No, killing Emperor of Space Nazis doesn't make up for the fact that you were a space Nazi for 20 years and you wiped out races.
No, it doesn't. Like, and Luke, to some extent, that's why I say Luke's naive. Luke was naive, possibly, to try to save Vader, and it cost him. It cost him his hand, cost him a few friends. And I could definitely see Luke trying to save people and it not working. I can't see Luke raising a sword to a child, a sleeping child. And that's my main thing. It's like there's flawed, and then there's just bad person.
Well, also, we saw three movies with these characters. They finally got their big win We can end it there. But if you're not going to end it there, don't take that hard-earned win away. Like I was talking about Avatar, The Last Airbender. He beats the Fire Lord, and presumably he starts working on the whole restoring balance and harmony thing. And I'm sure that that's not going to be easy, but it's something that, you know, he'll get to work on. We don't go to the next series and it's like, yeah, Aang was a, like, he just started drinking because he failed and the Fire Nation collapsed on itself. And now it's just a whole bunch of tribes murdering each other. And it's basically modern day Iraq. Like, that didn't happen because we saw 100 episodes of, or I guess it was 64 episodes. We saw a whole bunch of him grow and develop and earn that win. So taking it away is really cheap. And I feel like that's what they did with, to an extent, with Han and Leia. I agree. I can see them doing what they did, but I didn't like it so much. I sure didn't like how Luke raised a sword to a child and then cut himself off from the Force and hung out on an island for 20 years.
Well, and let me say this. When I say I could see Han and Leia not being the best parents, that doesn't mean they... I also, like, I think what they did in the movies was fine as far as Han and Leia's relationship with their son goes. But their son, like, that doesn't make sense. Like, what should have happened was the kids probably should have had a complicated relationship with their parents, but ultimately the story could have been about them fixing that relationship. These aren't like the best characters. I did have an attachment to them when I was in high school and when I was, you know, younger, but I am older now and I've kind of moved on. And I think everybody else my age should probably move on. I think we got lost a little bit with the movies. So essentially we're asking a question. Would you rather see fan fiction Star Wars, or would you rather see something new with these characters? And I think that if you're going to take such a drastic tone shift in Star Wars, to all of a sudden Star Wars is not Joseph Campbell's hero journey, super generic, save the princess from the evil wizard. If you're not going to do that anymore, if you want to do something more nuanced and gritty and real, I think, yeah, you got to start somewhere else. You got to start somewhere else in time. You got to start with different characters.
If you're going to write a trilogy, you probably need to write a trilogy. You don't write the first one and then figure it out later. You have to at least know where you're going.
No, and I could say that for Timothy Zahn and probably the whole crew of editors and, you know, Lucas Media. I don't know what the book branch is, but everybody who worked on this book, somebody was in charge of continuity for the Star Wars Expanded Universe novels. And whoever was in charge of continuity, they sat down with Timothy Zahn, they made a plan, they had a very clear, this is the first act of this trilogy, this is the second act, this is the third. Is it too fan servicey? Is it too self-indulgent? Yeah, but that's exactly what the audience for this book wanted. Disney wanted to make something for the fans, and what they really meant was, we don't want to take a risk.
Yeah, they should, like I said, set it 100 years later, 50 years later.
Honest to God, I'd have just recast it.
That too. You could either recast, or you could have the old people show up as... cameos. I mean, they recasted Kirk and Spock.
Yeah, exactly. I'd have recast it, and I would have had them show up as, like, have Mark Hamill be Obi-Wan. You know, like have someone like that. Have Mark Hamill be
that
some
would actually be really neat.
Old wise guy. Like, you know, the Battlestar Galactica thing. Like they redid Battlestar Galactica for sci-fi. It wound up being more popular than ever, but like they made Starbuck a woman, which of course the fan base was up in arms about. They made a bunch of major changes, but they did have like the old Starbuck came in to do a different role. And that kind of, you know, if that kind of got the actor's blessing, like if he's okay with this, and he wasn't super okay with it, to be honest, he didn't love it, but he did it. He went along with it. And that sort of tamed the fan base. I think you could do something like that. If you could recast,
probably should have.
Yeah. You could recast those roles and you could bring the old actors in to let them see that there's no bad blood, that they've kind of passed the torch. But, and though to be perfectly honest, Mark Hamill's not that old. There was a lot of panic, I sense.
Yes. Every one of these movies was a...
It was a reaction to the
response.
Yeah, it was a reaction to the response the previous movie received.
Yes. The seventh movie was a reaction to the prequels. So they decided to just go with the safe bet of let's redo the original. And then that one was deemed too safe. So the eighth movie was, well, we got to go crazy and in a different direction. And that no one liked that. And so the ninth movie was like, well, we got to try and do something in between. And we got to retcon the eighth movie. So they did that. They didn't have a vision. They just reacted to shit.
You needed somebody directly in between the mindset of the Disney execs and George Lucas. Because George Lucas is right about one thing. You shouldn't care what the audience thinks. Like,
right.
You should care.
They're always going to complain about something.
Exactly. They don't know what they want. If you had asked, it's that Henry Ford quote, you know, if I'd asked the customer what they wanted, they would have told me a faster horse. People don't know what they want until they see it. And if you just want to give people what they want, you're making schlock.
So it sounds like we're out of time.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to another episode of Words About Books, a poorly spoken podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at WABpod. That's at WABpod. You can also check us out at wordsaboutbooks.ninja. If you want to check out our blog, sometimes we post extra show notes and things we didn't have time to cover in the episode. That would be blog.wordsaboutbooks.ninja. And with that, we'll see you next time.
Adios.
Now, I would like you to try to pronounce the word I sent you.
Yggdrasil.
Do you really not know how to pronounce that word? It's Yggdrasil.
Yggdrasil. Huh. Tales of Symphonia lied to me.
You can blow up a ship full of people wrongfully arrested by the Empire. But as long as Chewie's not on it.
Don't even feel bad about that later.
Yeah, don't ever think about that again. Rey should be in jail.
It's almost like no one knows how hyperspace works. And they're just making it up as they go along for whatever they need to do at that moment. It's almost like Ether is better written than Star Wars Hyperspace. I'm going to say that's a point to Edenverse, available on Amazon now.